All right, so we're here today for another episode of Generative AI in the Real World. And today our guest is Justin Norman. He is co-founder and CTO at Vera, and he was previously the VP of Data Science, Analytics, and Data Products at Yelp. And he was also co-author of that popular O'Reilly book, Product Management for AI. So Justin, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So your book, Product Management for AI, was published a few years ago. So obviously now we have generative AI. We have all these models, ChatGPT, Llama, Claude, and so on and so forth. So how has the landscape changed for AI product management?
What a good question. It has changed, I'd say, astronomically. And obviously, the advent and the introduction and the growth of, generative AI, both in the, large language model and text space, as well as multimodal and now images and video, is completely changed how users and customers of products interact with AI. It used to be that there was a tremendous amount of scaffolding that was placed around an AI outcome or AI product to even, deliver it to a user. And now we are having users interact almost directly with the models themselves. So that is that's a huge change. And the reality is that most product leaders now, as a result of being consumers at that level, understand the value of AI and understand a lot more about the technology itself. And so the sort of dark side of that is that everyone now, whether they're a product leader or a consumer or someone who is in the engineering world, styles themselves as an AI product manager that works at an AI company, that works on AI products. And so cutting through the hype is a real challenge now. And I would say that's even true for the experts. And then there's sort of this other piece, which is around dangers of misuse, which it means that production AI is mainstream. And so the public has experience of both good and bad applications in their daily life. And so PMs are now struggling to not only capture the value, right? So this is actually commercial value, but also satisfy a much more diverse set of stakeholders. And so this is thorny topics around risk and compliance and IP rights. In Europe, things like, privacy and the right to be forgotten, right to not be trained on. And so there's a lot of different, sort of factors going into the product world that were just not present before or were certainly not at the forefront. And so it's an exciting time, but also a time where we have a lot to learn.
So it seems like the Hello World example is RAG. And so, Justin, I'm curious, what are you hearing from your fellow product managers in terms of the, what are they struggling with in terms of implementing or deploying RAG?
Sure. Yeah, so RAG's an interesting sort of capability. Again, it is funny how these things work out. So obviously the process or the sort of technique of RAG is not new at all, and it predates the generative revolution. It was meant to be used with, BERT style language models to add context. And I think one of the things that's really useful is to kind of level set on what we believe large language models can be good at and how they interact with a user interface, and then also where they're weak and where augmentation techniques can help. So the way I like to think about it is, if a model is your McKinsey consultant or your Big Five consultant, it actually has the ability to, within reason, give you a good sounding answer about things that it has experienced before, that it has in domain of its knowledge, right? So if that McKinsey consultant, majored in math, they may have a pretty good background being able to answer math questions. If they're a computer scientist, they have a pretty good background in answering computer science questions. And so the skills that they are strong in are in that area. As we've learned, as you drift from what the model was trained on and the skills that are in that data set, things start to get pretty weird. We have the hallucinations, we have some of the sort of just nonsensical answers or perhaps just even incorrect answers. And so just like a consultant, if you ask them something, they're going to answer it, but it may or may not actually be correct, depending on whether or not they have that skill set. So what do you do when you are faced with improving or increasing a consultant's knowledge? Well, you have a couple of options. One of them is you can send the consultant back to school and they can learn a new skill. But if they get really good at that skill, they may not be able to retain all the knowledge they had that was general before. And so you may get a different outcome if you ask them a technical question or a specific question on an area that they used to know, but now have devoted their efforts to learning something new. And so that's like the process of fine-tuning. The fine-tuning process offers the ability to build new skills in the model to do wholly new out-of-domain things, but it does have a cost. And the cost is that, you know, if you hyper-focus on one thing, the generalizability is typically not there, unless you make a much larger model, and that's really challenging, you know, for all the reasons that we know. Now, when you think about the other option you have, is you could send that same consultant with the skills that they have to the library, and they could go open a book, reference that book, and for assuming they understand how to incorporate that knowledge into their answer, they have an exact expert, you know, sort of data that they can bring into their answer from having gone to the library and that specific topic. And so RAG gives you a lookup capability that's really similar to that. If you have a well-organized data set and you have a mechanism for retrieving that information that's reliable, you can bring it into the context of the conversation you're having with the model and have it not only be you know, contextually relevant, but also attributable to a source of information or source of data that is reliable. And that's really important because no matter how capable your model gets from a skills perspective, new information will always come into the system, and also expert or specific technology or specific technological knowledge is going to be required for certain types or certain depths of conversations. And so if you look at the like original sort of comparison of RAG that sort of Microsoft, I believe, had just done, it's about agriculture. And they were teaching these models to, you know, to build knowledge bases around agricultural you know, implementations in austere environments, irrigation, you know, things like, you know, planting and cultivating crops. And it turns out, like, you know, you needed a balance of both fine-tuning and RAG in order to have the sort of credible answer over time that people are looking for. So for a product leader, it's about understanding which tools are good for the job, understanding which where the limitations of a model happen to be from a knowledge and from an outcomes perspective, and then also understanding how to test the interaction and feedbacks with the user population you're in to adjust your investment in any of those three areas. So I think that's just a really important context to be able to, you know, give to PMs as they're both improving their own internal skill sets around it and also deciding where they invest from a product roadmap perspective.
Yeah, and it seems like for RAG, retrieval augmented generation, people forget that, you know, the most important thing there is still the data. I mean, same thing with fine tuning, right? So your fine tuning data set is super important. So with RAG, it turns out that the more you know about your data, the better the RAG system is, which is not surprising at all, right? So if you have metadata, it's better. If you put a knowledge graph on top of it, it's even better. But I guess the thing about RAG is it's surprisingly useful even out of the box. So you get a little bit of value. So it's a bit tempting to just go overboard, correct?
I think that's true. And I think you made a really good point, which I want to expand on too, which is about, you know, it's certainly about the data, but it's also about how the data is organized. Like there are really awesome data sets that then get put into a vector store that aren't organized well, and then the retrieval process is bad. So you would have spent all this time curating, cultivating information, but you can't get it out in a way that a model can understand. So that's a really important area of work. And so the library analogy, again, continues, I think, to pay dividends, and that like the decibel systems, the organizational systems for rapid retrieval and accurate retrieval actually become a lot of the core of why this works well. And so, you know, you're right to center on that. But I think there's also, you know, a skills conversation to be had as well around, you know, what the system architecture needs to look like to support a process like this. Search in particular is really messy and complicated problem. It has been since the origin of the internet and even before. And so what we're really recognizing here is that, you know, you have to be good at, you know, the actual encoding process, right? So you have to have an embedding model that is good at, you know, providing a good representation of complex information. you have to have a storage mechanism that is robust enough to put a lot of things in a well-organized fashion at a reasonable, you know, scaling factor of growth. And then, you know, we have to have, of course, the retriever, which we've spoken about, which does it, which does a good job of, you know, using well-organized data and returning that in a really performant way, because the expectation is largely that a you know, generative tool is getting near to instantaneous answers. So you don't want to add a lot of latency on the process of just adding context. So all your points are well taken, but I think it's important to kind of break down where product decisions are actually relevant here. And it's not as simple as just putting a RAG system out of the box that you might get from one of these vendors and expecting a good outcome, especially when expert data is being delivered to experts. So I think that's where a lot of the sensitivity comes in.
Yeah, I would add even something even earlier in the pipeline, which is information extraction. Thanks for listening to this episode of the O'Reilly Podcast, Generative AI in the Real World. If you want to listen to the full version, please log in to the platform at O'Reilly.com.